Hello and welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider, and I'm joined by co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at EastSider. You can follow Brent on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure to follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page if you aren't already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support over there is always very much appreciated. We're back with you today for our usual episode on Friday. We weren't here for on Wednesday, so we're going to be making it back up to you guys Saturday live from Talkstar Resort Arena. Just a heads up on that. We'll be coming in your airways on the weekend from the Talkstar Resort Arena for the Suns Thunder game tomorrow. But in the meantime, we want to touch with you guys today on a topic that we thought of this morning, which is thinking about three ways the Suns can keep winning their games, which it seems like a simple question, but it's also kind of a complicated one for the Suns right now because they get to put together any winning streaks this year, the 2-11 on the season. So, Brenna, I'll throw it your way to have explanations more on today's episode, but we probably start with you as well. Just what do you think, just for the Suns to keep this rolling, this positive momentum, what can they do to keep it going and not have it really just like the Memphis game just disappear in less than 48 hours?
Yeah, it's a good point that, like you said, there's been no winning streak. So 3-11, but obviously they won opening night. Then a couple weeks later, Memphis, and now again a few games after that. So putting together a streak of victories is going to be important, especially because I think when they get to their East Coast trip here in a little bit, it's going to be pretty tough to string together wins there. That's just, for any team in the league, a really tough thing to do, to go all the way across the country on the road and be successful night in and night out. So to get some road, to get some wins like this at home especially is super important. But so that's kind of what we were thinking here, is like the reason it's so not confusing, but it has been so tough on the Suns already to kind of find a winning method that they can count on. It's just there's so many moving parts. I mean, we're still seeing it. We talked so much about the rotation yesterday, about what they were able to do to win against the Spurs, and how much of that came down to De'Anthony Melton playing instead of Elie Okobo, Jamal Crawford, Josh Jackson, just guys that have been so up and down and haven't seen playing time consistently. So that's kind of where we were hoping to go. And I think the first one, that's the most obvious one, that everybody that has watched this team has thought to themselves at one point or another this year, especially the last few games, has just been Mikal Bridges. And I think the main way to really keep the momentum going and to build a starting unit that is going to be more successful, I think, too, which is shocking for somebody who was such a well-renowned free agent acquisition for the Suns and Trevor Ariza. But the truth is, this starting lineup, these five guys together, just played so well and have continued to play well together all year. So I think that's the main one. And I like the stat that you dug up on this, especially the three young core pieces that are part of the starting lineup and how well they're playing together. So you should tell everyone about that.
Yeah, right before we came on the air, I was just doing some stat digging because I found it interesting just how effective the Booker, Ayton, Bridges lineup has been so far. Minimum 55 minutes per NBAstats.com. The net rating for those guys is plus 36.5. And over this entire NBA season, only two lineups have been more potent than that per on the net rating scale, which is Giannis Antetokounmpo, Brooke Lopez, and Tony Snell with the Bucks at plus 45.2. And second overall is Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, Alphonso McKinney at plus 41.8. Then in third place, about 5 points behind them, is Booker, Ayton, and Bridges. So you have an MVP candidate in Giannis, and you have two former MVPs in Durant and Curry on the best team of all time. Then you have the three young core guys of the Suns, so in third place over even better teams like the Rockets, Lakers. No one even comes close to this net rating at how high it is for these guys. So I think that's pretty eye-opening to say the least, and it kind of shows you how potent these guys are together when they are on the floor.
Yeah, and I think the other end of that, to show, you know, it's one thing, I think the conversation would be a lot easier if Bridges was playing well for a rookie, but Ariza was up to his normal standard. The real problem here is just that Ariza hasn't been himself and on either end, really, but especially on offense. So he's taking a lot of threes still, and I think that's been mostly helpful for the Suns. I think he could be even taking more. He's tossing away, passing off open, or not, I guess they're not open, but they're for him, I guess it's just become such a standard that he can take those contested shots, and he's not taking quite as many as I would remember him taking in Houston. So I think he can keep doing more of that. He's in the 28th percentile for effective field goal percentage, which is just the total number that kind of encapsulates threes and twos. And I mean, the starting lineup right now, which has been their most used lineup, with Ariza, not from Wednesday, but from before that, Ariza, Warren, Ayton, Kanan, and Booker, is a minus 28.2 per 100 possessions over the course of this season. That's in the first percentile. So basically, it's been one of the absolute worst lineups in the entire league. And you compare that with the three-man unit that you just talked about, and it's kind of pretty glaring. You have one of the better core threes in the entire league so far this year compared to a five-man unit that has been one of the absolute worst.
Now, here's a quandary I think Igor's in for right now, because I know Anderson was pretty easy to pull after seven games because he just looks awful. But Ariza, like you said, one-year $15 million signing, probably their biggest signing before he stepped on the court in his son's jersey, probably the biggest signing they've had in free agency in multiple years at this point. But obviously, it's disappointing. Tyson, yeah, it's been really disappointing for him. And thinking, like you said, on the stats there, it's just been a really rough start for him shooting-wise. But like I was saying with Igor there, how do you, like, mend that relationship with Trevor Ariza? Because I don't, unless they just want to get up on him now and just trade him when December 15 comes around, I don't know how you're going to like massage the egos a little bit, because I don't think how Trevor Ariza is going to go from the bench, which I think you told me before the episode started, since 2013 was the last time he came off the bench with the Wizards. And I just don't see him doing that for a rookie at this point. But maybe they move Ariza to the four and then Burdage to the three and then put TJ at sixth man. But then also, with the way TJ is playing, I think he'd be pretty pissed off himself if he got moved from the starting role to a six man again.
Yeah, I think that's the toughest part, because I think that would be an easy way to make it happen, where Bridges is able to play the three or he plays a four. Those guys are pretty interchangeable. And Warren did do pretty similar stuff. You know, he was productive and efficient and playing heavy minutes as a sixth man, but we know that he's started most of the last two seasons and tends to be more comfortable in that role, and he's earned it. I think he's played incredibly this year, so it'd be tough to put him there too. So it is hard. And I think not only would I imagine that part of Ariza coming over was a result of him, you know, knowing that he would at least have a starting role, be playing heavy minutes, be able to maintain his reputation and value to teams, even in one season where he's probably not going to win a whole lot. I think that was probably part of the agreement. But the other thing is, even if you're willing to break off that promise, or maybe the new front office doesn't feel so attached to doing that for him, you still want to have his value for the Suns' perspective, because, you know, you want to trade him, hopefully. I don't think anyone would prefer to buy him out rather than getting an asset back for him, especially with the point guard needs still looming. So you don't want to make a guy mad or hurt his value in a way that's going to decrease what you can get back for him. So it's going to be tough. I think probably the ultimate answer is maybe not to continue to start Bridges, but just to give him, you know, 30 minutes a night somehow, and just try to, maybe that means that Ariza is just playing slightly less, but still starting. I think that might be something, but it's just tough because you have three guys who for one reason or another really should be in that starting lineup.
I think, like you said there, Brent, I think the most logical thing there is doing like what they did with Ryan Anderson at the first beginning of the season there, where he played like 25 minutes per game, but he was still starting. I think that makes a lot of sense for Ariza, but I don't know with how good Ariza has been the past few years if he's going to accept 20 to 25 minutes in a starting role even still. But
yeah, well, I think it also makes sense too, because you could have, we were kind of talking about this yesterday, recapping the Spurs game, trying to figure this out too. And it's, I think, you know, if Ariza becomes the backup four, if Anderson just stops playing, then Bridges being the first sub into the game and then Ariza coming back in to spell Warren later in the first quarter or at the beginning of the second quarter, that's an easy way to kind of, you're already changing the roles, but you can also kind of decrease his minutes at the same time if you do it that way.
And it also kind of frees up minutes for Josh Jackson along the way too, if you still believe in his development. So I think that's probably the most logical way to go. But is there anything else you want to hit on as far as McHale goes?
No, I think it's a tough thing to jumble with and try to figure out a way to make it work. We've seen the rotation be probably one of the biggest problems this year, just trying to find guys that can play together and work right. But I think Bridges is making it clear that when he's on the court, things go well. So he needs to be on the court as much as possible.
Totally agree there. If there was an all-rookie team so far, then McHale Bridges makes it some way or another, first, second, or third team, however that way you want to slice it. But before we go any further here, I want to tell you guys about Locked On NBA Net, our Twitter account. If you're not already following them, make sure to go follow it at Locked On NBA Net for our national stage of our Locked On Network, where you can follow all the guys like me, Brendan, David Locke, John Krause, Locked On Celtics, John Garcia, Locked On Spurs. there's so many good guys out there that you should be following, that even outside of Phoenix, there's so much good, really, information available to you at the palm of your hand, on your phone, on your desktop, by simply following at Locked On NBA Net. So if you're not already, make sure to follow them, because there's live coverage from every game, every practice, really every event. If there's breaking news, you'll be sure to find Locked On NBA Net. They'll be covering it some way or another. So make sure to go follow them.
Yeah, you want to start us off with the second of our three ways the Suns can keep winning?
Yeah, I think it's another really easy one, logical one for them to do, because I think that one is playing sound defense and showing more effort on that end, because we saw, I guess, the Spurs, Brendan, if they're actually playing solid defense, they're communicating, they're not just slouched over, not looking at each other confused, they actually play good defense. And that's I think it's just a process of buying in the Igor system. I think that's been a slower process than we both thought it would be. But I think once they buy into that system, I think it's going to be more smooth sailing from them from there.
Yeah, I agree. They've been the second worst defense in the league so far, but they're not actually that far below like they were last year. So I think there is room to improve. And I think not to go back to Bridges, but that will help as well on that end for sure. He's already been an incredible defender. And I think D'Anthony Melton will continue to help on that end too. And, you know, besides those guys, those are rookies. Like, you know, if you're counting on rookies to really make a difference, it's going to be a problem. They have that same growing pain with the center position, of course, with DeAndre Ayton learning on the fly, playing such high minutes and trying to make it work and learning the intricacies. Still defending the pick and roll is a struggle for him against even average matchups. He just really hasn't clicked with the way to kind of be everywhere at once, like some of the better defensive centers that have his same athletic potential, but just read the game at another level than him. So that's going to continue to be a problem. But to me, I think, you know, as far as veteran players, I think really a lot of it's going to come down to Booker becoming healthier, continuing to recover from that hamstring injury, and just giving more effort on that end. He's been one of the culprits, I think, night in and night out. There's been some games, I think, against Boston, he was pretty good, but you know, they gave a ton of points in that game, so the end results haven't been pretty. And I think a lot of it does come down to Booker. He's the guy that's on the court the most. He's defending great players every night, and he's going to need to take up more of a responsibility on that end as the season goes along if they're going to improve.
I'm glad you brought Booker. That's who I was going to go right to as well, because once James Harden started picking up like 10-15% more effort on defensive end, it started clicking for the Rockets. But obviously they're way further behind than the Rockets are in their development plan. But if Booker can at least show more effort like he has in the past few games, I think that goes a long way toward them improving there. And I think it helps Booker as well, because it shows that if he can serve some energy, he can trust his teammates like Warren, Ayton, and Bridges and the rest of those guys to put up some efficient shots while he's conserving his energy. I think it helps him out to just help out a few more extra possessions per game defensively, because if you look at the numbers so far since he returned from injury, he's averaging almost 1.5 steals per game. And that's more, I think, because he's focusing more on the defensive end when he realizes that he has so much talent and on his roster, even alongside him.
Yeah, I think this year he has the opportunity to actually put forth more on that side of the ball than he has in the past, because he has more of a support system on the offensive end between the offensive system itself and obviously having DeAndre Ayton to join TJ Warren and some of the extra shooting that they've been able to get out of Bridges, Ariza, Kanan. So I think he's not having to hold to pick up such a heavy load on offense anymore. And I think we have seen over the past few games, he's realizing, you know, we're kind of seeing it on offense too, where he's been more of a facilitator as he kind of recovers from that injury. And I think he can do the same thing on defense where, you know, he doesn't have to score 40 for them to win. When he does score 40, it's pretty likely that they will win, but you know, he doesn't have to do that. So I think he can give more on defense. And I think one way that, not just Booker, but I think especially Booker could improve and kind of become more stable on defense, is to continue to switch. And we've seen that with Bridges playing more. We've seen that with Warren in the starting lineup. They're able to be more positionless. And Booker, you know, because he is so big, it's one of the reasons that it seems like forever ago, but Earl Watson wanted to play him at the three, is just because he has that size. Maybe not as tall, but he's strong and big in a way that he can defend bigger players. And that's a lot of what ended up helping James Harden, is, you know, he can hold up against fours and big threes and even, you know, maybe some centers here and there when switched onto them for late clock situations and things like that. So I think making it a little easier on Booker by having him not always have to defend somebody like, you know, Klay Thompson and chase him around all night when he's able to just switch on to like a Damian Jones or something, that's a little easier on him. And it makes his job easier and he can read the court a little bit more when he's switching like that and pick up those steals. So I think the more they switch, the more they'll improve. This roster felt like that from the beginning because of Ayton and Booker's deficiencies. And I think we're seeing it already that helps them stay in games to be able to play defense that way rather than the traditional pick and roll coverage.
Yeah, if this roster construction, how former GM Ryan McDonough put together, was based around switching, and when you see guys like Bridges and D'Anthony Melton, who was brought in, I know they love that SGA, but they got D'Anthony Melton instead, who fits that switching mold. And I think that makes a lot more sense to cover for the guys like Harden, but Booker and also DeAndre Ayton as well, maybe even TJ Warren if he has some struggles as well. But anything else you want to hit on as far as team defense? Because I feel like it's more of an effort thing than anything else.
I think it is. I think that, again, I want to point out, too, that they've been a good rebounding team. That seems like a problem on some nights because it can be so demoralizing when some team gets on the offensive glass and Steven Adams is mucking things up. And we've had to play the Thunder. We've had to see the Thunder beat the Suns twice now, and it just doesn't look great. But the DeAndre Ayton effect is there on the glass. So that's one area they've continued to be stable on all season long. So I think you're right that, you know, plugging up some of those holes and really just preventing penetration, preventing easy shots is just, it's the difference between them being as bad as they've been and being somewhat closer to average. And I think we could see that quickly if they make some of those changes.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. And before we go any further, I want to tell you guys as well about the Locked On Network with our podcast, which features Sam Amick and Ben Golliver, the Locked On National Show. If you're not already, make sure you subscribe to the Locked On National Show with David Locke and the rest of the gang over there. And you can hear from Ben Golliver and Sam Amick. Every time there's breaking news, they'll be on during the week to discuss it. So if you're not already, hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast from, and make sure to follow at Locked On NBA Net and the entire Locked On Podcast Network if you're not listening to anything outside the Suns.
Yeah, also to add to that too, we've been hitting you guys with Amick and Golliver for a while. We just got the announcement today that Trevor Booker, former NBA player, by the time you're listening to this, he will probably have made his first appearance on the, well, he's not a former NBA player. He's rehabilitating an injury, hoping to make it back, but this season, not in the league. And so he's probably going to have made his first appearance on the Locked On NBA show this season too. He'll be making appearances throughout the network on the team shows. Hopefully we can get him in to maybe talk about DeAndre Ayton's development or something like that, because he's been added to our team. So if you want to hear some on-court expertise, somebody who's you've probably watched play all these years and can bring that perspective to things, he will be a frequent contributor. So make sure you subscribe to that show for sure. Now that he's yet another great guest for that network and the national perspective as well. So go subscribe and rate and review that show and then come back to us.
Yeah. I think if we want to move to our third segment here, it's about Devin Booker getting easier shots. But I think one thing that ties into that, Brendan, that we haven't touched on a lot yet, is that his hamstring, he's still not 100% back, and his explosiveness and his burst seems to be lacking in a few spots here and there. I think some of that gets fixed once he's fully healthy. So what do you think about that point before we even go any further?
I think you're exactly right. And he insists that he's feeling better, but I don't think there'd be any way to really take him at his word on that at this point. He's, pulling up when he would have normally gone to the rim. He's deferring, passing up open shots. Well, not maybe wide open threes or anything, but he is giving up shots that we've seen him take for years now. And I think that kind of thing, the lack of aggressiveness, is where it really shows up. He's not, you know, pulling up in awkward ways, which he was maybe the first couple games, where you could really see physically that it was getting to him. But I think, you know, you still see it where he's not quite there. I think his game is just not where it used to be, where it should be, where he would want it to be right now. And I think you're right that once it gets a little bit back to normal, I think some of this will go away. But I think there are some problems too, between turnovers and lack of spacing in certain lineups, that it's not making it as easy on him. Now, is it easier than last year? Of course. But if they want to really make the progress they were hoping for, I think giving him openings and space is super important.
I feel like an aspect that hasn't been used enough, even though he's taking three per game so far, is catch and shoot, putting him in situations running off screens like a Klay Thompson or a Bradley Beal. It's only happening three times per game. He's only hitting at a 34% clip. Last year, he took 4.5 per game, had a 41% clip. So I think that's more of just him being in a slump more than anything. But I think also, like you mentioned there, just getting him easier looks within a dribble handoff heavy system. It seems like maybe having him run off and sneak behind screens might be more of a logical idea at this point.
Yeah, it's, you know, it comes a lot of it too. I think one of the other main areas that it shows why he is struggling like this or it hasn't been his usual self is that he doesn't have a point guard. Now, last year he didn't either, but I, you know, the health combined with the point guard thing, I think this year is a little bit different where he could really use somebody to take some of that burden off of him, get him easy shots rather than the opposite way where he's been setting up Kanan for so many, you know, not a coincidence that he had 12 assists, a career high the other night, and Kanan made 5 of 5 threes. I would guess that a lot of those were connections between those two players. So it should be a little bit more balanced in that regard where hopefully you'd have a point guard there who would free up Booker for some of those shots. He's taking less shots at the rim than he should be. Again, this year, that's been a consistent thing for him, right around finishing wise where he was last year. 59%, just a little bit below where you would hope. He's, you know, he's a really elite scorer, but he's always struggled at the rim. So having a guy, you know, he's never been a great cutter, but I think just general spacing and the defense having to honor more players than they have in the past will just give him an easier path to open shots. So I think, you know, there's not an easy fix like, oh, if they just did this one thing, it would really, really help them. But it's symptomatic, I think, of their overall problems that they haven't been able to get their best scorer in position to make plays as often as they would like.
We've seen it, especially the past three or four games, since the Brooklyn game at least, where teams are really scheming against Devin Booker. This happened a lot last year. I feel like it's happening a lot more in an aggressive fashion this year where they're really forcing them to have everyone else beat them except Booker. Have you noticed that as well, and what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think it'll be harder for some teams. We've had to watch him go up against Caris LeVert, Drew Holiday, and a combination of all of Oklahoma City's crazy defenders from Terrence Ferguson to Paul George and everyone else. But I think it's harder to do when a team doesn't have the talent to really match them like that. I think you kind of saw that against the Spurs. They don't have a lockdown wing defender like that to throw at him, but at the same time, you know, that a lot of teams do. A lot of teams build themselves to have a guy like that. So it's not going to get any easier just hoping that you play better matchups. And I think, you know, the other guys just have to be able to make those plays. And I think one way that, from a personnel standpoint, one way that they're going to be able to make that a little easier on him. And I think that's why I'm so excited when Josh Jackson can do a little bit of something, because when he's probably the second best playmaker on this team. Maybe, you know, relative to position, it might be Ayton. He's obviously a pretty good passer for a center, but they're not going to run their offense through him. Whereas Jackson can do a lot of that stuff. So I think if he can continue to stay on the court really and do some of that, I think that it's probably the best option. Jamal Crawford maybe is another guy there too, getting him on the court with some better playmaking where he can kind of use off-ball stuff to get free rather than having to just run into like a battering ram into the likes of Drew Holiday or Klay Thompson.
Now, deviating just a moment away from Booker and talking more about his shot selection and his overall shot usage so far, I wanted just to gauge your opinion because, I mean, we touched a lot on Booker so far. I just wanted to see your opinion because I know we touched on this right before it came on the air about DeAndre Ayton. He's averaging 10 shots per game in the last 7 games since Booker returned, but in the 3 games he was out, he averaged 15 per game. And now with Booker in his past 7 games, he's averaging almost 20 shots per game. So do you think that in time, do you think it should be more 15-15, or do you think 20 and 10, the shot distribution there for those two guys is the most realistic idea?
Yeah, I think it's really tough because I think ideally, yeah, I mean, he's probably the second best scorer on the team, maybe TJ Warren. That's somebody who they want to get a lot of offense out of, and he can create his own shot in a way no other big on the roster can. But I think at the same time, we can't have it both ways. I think there's a lot of nights where we get frustrated when he does have the ball that he's not, you know, doesn't really know what to do with it or isn't able to take advantage of mismatches. He's just not at that level yet. So yeah, I would ideally hope that he could score a little better, but I think it's also just probably not going to happen. Even if he's getting more opportunities, I just don't think I've seen from him that he's going to be able to just create points just by way of taking more shots. I think you might see him become a little less efficient at the rim and things like that if he's having to try to create more consistently. I think, you know, and this is a little silly because they've only won three games, but the three games they've won, Booker played in all of them. So, you know, I think that balance we saw when Ayton was taking a lot more, they didn't win. So it's kind of tough. I don't know. I don't quite know if I want Ayton to be that level of involvement quite yet, but I think if he can improve, then for sure.
Yeah, it's just interesting thing to follow moving forward. Like you mentioned, all right, the 3-0 with Booker in the lineup is noteworthy because it was the same thing as last year where the team just tanked with Booker out when Booker not in the lineup. But is there anything else you want to hit on as far as today's episode revolving around Bridges or defense or Devin Booker?
No, I think it'll be an interesting matchup again tomorrow to have them play the Thunder and see. The third matchup against the Thunder is very weird early in the season, so hopefully they can kind of grow from that, playing another team so many times right away and get a little better. Hopefully it's a little bit closer than the last one, even if they don't win.
Yeah, looking at the schedule here between the Thunder and the Suns, they have played three times in the past 3 weeks, and then they won't play again for another almost 6 weeks after this one. They played December 28th at home in Phoenix.
And that'll be the last one. That's super strange to have all your games against one team before the first of the year.
Yeah, that's just a weird scheduling quirk this year. It's really been a bad thing for the Suns this year. I know we touched on the scheduling episode, but we knew it would be a rough start, and it's really showed that so far for the Suns.
Yep. Well, we will be back with you guys, like Evan said at the beginning, live from Talking Stick Resort Arena tomorrow for our usual recap episode, and then again probably Monday to start up next week. So we will see you guys then.
All right. Talk to you guys later.